go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yeah, I kind of missed the cue there, didn't I? Sure did. Last night, toward the end of the program, Kate wrote in and said, remind folks about the fact that the equipment's hanging on by a thread. Well, the equipment is hanging on by a thread, and that's some of the reason I missed my cue there is part of the equipment that's hanging on by a thread. You probably hear ordinary introductory music, but the part of the signal that gets routed into my in-ear monitors didn't. All I heard was, you know, like there was some little demon living in that part of the mix desk. Oh, well, you'll have that, I guess. But no, that is part of the reality here. And it will have to be addressed, preferably sooner rather than later. Big plans, you know, at some point, probably during the summer, we're going to do a whole tear out of the studio and a reconfig and a rebuild. It just has to happen. Anyway, welcome to the program. It is, of course, the third day of April, 2012. This is a live show. I caught a reference to Bob is live most nights, Monday through Friday. Look. The default schedule is Monday through Friday, okay, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. But I have been away from the microphone, and I ain't been going fishing or nothing. No, this is not anything resembling vacation work. This is the kind of work that we do, well, the kind of work that's necessary for me to have any sort of integrity when I get behind the microphone. Just being a babbler is not enough. So, I'm involved. And I go out and try to do things that will benefit not just my family, not just my friends, but this particular region of the country and the country in general. I was having a conversation on the phone with a friend of mine earlier today who was telling me about overhearing a coal baron on an airplane flying out of Charleston. And I know we've got people who know how to figure this sort of thing, but it was a stunning number that was getting bandied about. The man was talking about part of the conversation, and folks like maybe the Sierra Club should take this to heart in their so-called Beyond Coal campaign. The guy said, "Oh, when he was on a cell phone, and the whole plane could hear him, so it's not like this is any sort of a secret." But he said, "Oh, I don't give a damn about what the EPA does. I got 325,000 ton getting ready to leave Mexico for China, and they'll buy all I can dig. I don't have to sell it to somebody who wants to burn it here." Now, that's 325,000 tons of coal coming out of Appalachia. Think about that for a minute. That's way too big a number for me to be able to do any ciphering or gazintas on. But that would come back with some scratch, wouldn't it? Look at the world market for coal, metallurgical coal in particular, because that's what the real hunger is for. By the way, this is the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. We call what we do here conversation radio, and, well, little old me, I'm Bob Kincaid. But anyway, take a number like 325,000. go find what the spot price is for metallurgical coal on the world market, because it is a global market, just like oil. You know, the fellow said, the Chinese and India, they'll buy all I can ship. Now, multiply whatever the spot market price is for a ton of metallurgical coal by 325,000. Subtract out of that, and this is kind of specialized, but I know we've got people in the audience who know this sort of thing, whatever it would cost to ship 325,000 tons of coal from somewhere on the west coast of Mexico to China, subtract that number from the 325,000 times the spot market price per ton of metallurgical coal, and you get an idea of what one transaction goes for. Now, bear in mind that if that's mountaintop removal coal, and there's every chance in the world that it is, that it has been acquired through the labors of usually no more than 15 human beings. Now, take those 15 human beings and give them, say, oh, let's be generous and give them $70,000 a year each. It probably averages to something lower than that. And subtract that from that number, too. And you begin to get a pretty good idea of what kind of Jed Clampett walking around money we're talking about when we discuss the fact that the very life of Central Appalachia is being ripped right out from inside it. And you get the kind of idea, you get an idea of what kind of money is to be had by the sacrificing of us, our children, our posterity as yet ungotten and undreamt. And you begin to realize what's going on here. And the guy wasn't lying. He doesn't give a damn what the EPA does. That's just the noise they make to keep the rubes stirred up. You know, to keep the pawns busy. So that they can go on running their filthy little Dodge. And what a reality that is. Quite stunning, really. It's a lot of money. The guy also had another 75,000 tons leaving New Orleans, also bound for Asia. And you know what? That probably comes out of the earth in less than a month's time. Yeah. That's a lot. And you know what? If it comes from West Virginia, you know what the taxation is on that? Now, this is how upside down America is. I've told you in the past that here on this little acre of ground that we pay a higher amount in taxes per year than a coal baron does on reserves in the ground on 1,000 acres. And it's true. Because as long as the coal stays in the ground, they pay next to nothing on it. Once the coal gets out of the ground, they pay a little bit more than nothing, but not a lot more. If they were paying anything respectable in the way of taxes, this state and this region, because I include also southwestern Virginia and East Tennessee, northeast Tennessee and eastern Kentucky, would not be the coffee table books of poverty that they are. But it's funny to see that in 2012 there is still an economic model at work here that is not demonstrably different from the economic model that was in place when the raw material was sugar cane. And the century was the 16th. Well, Thank you to the individual who did. Thank you for the kind contribution that started the program out. It is much appreciated. We have started April as grimly as we finished March. Still, I don't think the PayPal button's up yet, but double check for me if you don't care. I can't, if you don't mind. But if you do wish to contribute to the program, and let's see, 10, 12. Yeah, so we need 237 more people. 236 more people. We need 236 more people to complete this month's Thrifty 250. At $10 a piece, it works out to something like less than a nickel per hour of broadcast. As Pepsi Cola used to say, nickel, 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 that's a lot. It's a lot better bargain than, say, buying coal from Appalachia to ship to China, I might add. Clayton with a question. Metallurgical coal, does that mean cannel coal? No. No, it doesn't. Cannel coal is a particular sort of coal that's very hard to find, very rare, and was said back, it was the gold standard of coal back in the late 19th century. It was said that you could simply light it with a match. It was that oily. Now, metallurgical coal is metallurgical coal, and the idea of metallurgical coal is fluid at best. At this point in time, you've got coal barons in Appalachia who are shipping as metallurgical coal stuff that 5 years ago would have been sold as so-called steam coal here in the U.S. But the point that a lot of folks don't understand is that if every blessed coal-fired power plant, every confounded coal-fired power plant in the United States was shut down tomorrow, as the coal baron noted, he wouldn't break a sweat. Because he could continue blowing up our communities, blowing up our homes, ruining our wells, poisoning our water, toxifying the air, ruining the insides of adults and children alike, as well as babies in the womb. And he could do it indefinitely because the hunger for coal, well, it's a sickness of the heart in places like Asia and India that only coal can heal. Interesting, isn't it, that the Europeans came here in the 16th century with a hunger for with a sickness of the heart that only gold could heal, and now we find ourselves flipping it over and sending the rotten petrified remnants of a few million years ago across an ocean to salve another lust. And sadly, it is not well understood that we will continue to be blasted, we will continue to be poisoned, until such time as the actual extraction of this stuff, especially by mountaintop removal, particularly, primarily, almost exclusively by mountaintop removal, is put to an end. It's that stark. And the fact of the matter is, every ton of so-called metallurgical coal that is sold outside the United States or transshipped outside the United States is a little less coal we've got in case we ever have to rebuild a sustainable, greener, ecologically more tolerable steel industry. You know, steel that's made in the United States is considerably less pollutive in its production than that which is made overseas. But the coal for making it won't be there when the time comes. If the time comes that we ever need it, won't be there. Just won't. But that is not, that's not where the program's going this evening. There's a whole lot of other stuff out there to consider. And some of it is even delightfully funny. Shall we start with the funny stuff? Shall we have a giggle or two at the beginning and then get into the grim stuff that makes us want to run screaming into the darkening night, although it's plenty bright outside right now? Because the Texas Betsy alerted me to this, and I saw a little bit more on it later. I just, oh mercy, I love this. The Rick Santorum, not Rick Santorum, wrong Rick. The Rick Perry pillhead story. This is just precious. It comes from a new ebook out from, I guess, what, Politico, called Inside the Circus. It was released today. And it's one of those bathroom stories, and I don't mean by that that it's nasty or anything. It's just strange little things that happen in bathrooms featuring Republicans, whether it's Larry Craig working on his tap dance routine there in the men's room in the Minneapolis airport, or in this case, Rick Perry working up a good tune. It happened in New Hampshire when a campaign manager for another campaign walked into the restroom only, or was in the restroom when Perry walked in singing, "I've Been Working on the Railroad." This is back before one of the pageants that took place in October. Quoting the book, it says, "Wondering who was making all the noise, the campaign manager turned his head and saw, to his surprise, the governor of Texas. Perry came down the row of about 20 urinals and stood companionably close by." You know, if you stop 18 urinals away, it's just not, it's not neighborly there, and Rick Perry is a neighborly Texan. The passage from the book continues, "Nonplussed, the campaign manager made a hasty exit. As the bathroom door closed, he could hear Perry still merrily singing, 'I've been working on the railroad, hold a new long day.'" The only thing is, and I don't know if the authors understand this or not either, isn't that somebody's fight song at some college in Texas? And isn't it not necessarily not, "I've been working on the railroad"? I love the mental imagery of it. And it's because he was wound out of his mind on pain medications. By way of some sort of confirmation, the Perry campaign answered that, yeah, he was on painkillers. And they must have been some gym dandies. It's described as, he was using painkillers in sufficient dosages to keep him standing through the two-hour debates. Standing may be about the best that you can say for his performances. Certainly standing but not straight. Standing but not functioning. Standing but not sober. You know, this couldn't have been any better. Well, I don't know. Huh? When I'm in a singing mood, and I try not to get into those moods on the air or behind the microphone because it's generally a pretty horrifying experience. When I'm in a singing mood, I usually opt for a classic. And by classic, I mean something that I picked up watching cartoons when I was a kid. A particular favorite of Margie's is, "Oh, carrots are divine, you get a dozen for a dime, it's magic. I see their orange skins and I hear violins, it's magic." Bugs. My particular favorite, though, and whenever I'm whacked out of my mind on pain meds, I usually opt for, "We were sailing along." on Moonlight, baby. Cartoons are a good thing. And personally, I would strongly suggest to Governor Perry that he try Moonlight Bay or Oh Carrots Are Divine. It's much better for a laugh than I've Been Working on the Railroad or whatever the lyrics are to the fight song once Texas A&M or whomever has gotten done with it. Because, wait, yeah, that's it. That's it. Yes, yes, of course. That's not I've Been Working on the Railroad. Dadgum clueless inside the beltway yahoo authors that they are. That's the eyes of Texas are upon you. Right? Only Rick was probably too whack to remember that, and he just opted for working on the railroad. This is your right winger. This is your right winger on drugs. I've been working on the railroad. Whew! Mercy. It's a beautiful thing. So, that. And then, just north, of course, of the Red River, lies the state of Oklahoma. And then this is another one from the You Can't Make This Up file. You know, we were talking last night about the shooting in Oklahoma, or no, in Oakland, and the horror of it. And there it was. You know, just another random bit of slaughter, so that the sacrifices offered up, so that masculinity challenged right wingers can stroke their semi-automatic pistol guns and feel like they're real patriotic Americans, which of course they aren't. They're just fetishists. But a gun story. I kid you not, the things I run across trying to pull a show together. A gun story coming out of, yes, that land, that despised land to the north of the Red River. Well, despised to Texans during football season at the very least. Oklahoma Stan. Oklahomans, of course, never want to be caught out or accused of not being sufficiently pious in such circumstances. Well, Oklahoma Stan has seen fit to modify one of its gun laws. And this is a real doozy. It has to do... Oh, please tell me I didn't close this. We'll get there in a minute. It has to do with... Do you remember when the bill was introduced? There he is! Yes, there's Shorty! Beady little eyes, puggy little nose. It looks like he's got every bit of about a 62 IQ. Ralph Shorty's the guy who a couple of months ago introduced a bill in the Oklahoma Stan Senate to make sure that we wasn't eating no babies. Really. He introduced the fetus food legislation, saying that no food to be consumed by God-fearing Oklahomans may be made from fetuses. had no idea, nor did many other people, that Oklahomans were dining on fetuses. But apparently Ralph Shorty thought they were. That was Senate Bill 1418. It prohibited the manufacture or sale in Oklahoma of food or products which use aborted human fetuses. Delicious with sweet taters, you know. Yeah, that Ralph Shorty. But I guess he got bored, because he done come up with him a new law. They're a little confused in Oklahoma, Stan, and it may take a couple of minutes just to sort through this. But they're always on guard out there in Oklahoma, Stan, as to making sure that all Oklahomans maintain their precious God-given right to carry firearms around. You know, when they go up to the sack and save for a loaf of Wonder Bread. It's a wonder you can eat it. Because you never know when zombie Osama is going to come popping around from behind the ho-hos and ding-dongs and just take down a whole grocery store full of patriotic American Oklahomans. And so you want to be ready there with your sidearm so you can take down zombie Osama. So it was in the Senate Public Safety Committee of Oklahoma, Stan, where changes were made to a bill that would make it mandatory to have proof of training to use a firearm, but not a firearm license. According to that change would make people who wanted to carry their concealed peacemaker up for that jar of Skippy peanut butter, terrorist fetus free. They'd have to have a document that showed they'd had instruction on the law and firearms training. But it wouldn't be considered to be a license to carry, because that would be unconstitutional in Oklahoma, Stan, to have a license to carry a weapon of deadly import. And we can't have that, because that's un-American. Now, it ain't un-American to have a license to catch a fish, nor to shoot a deer or a possum. Is there any possums in Oklahoma, Stan? I don't know. Got to have a license to keep a doggie or a kitty, but it'd be un-American to make an Oklahoman actually have to have a license to carry a thing that you can end a life with in a split second on something probably less than 12 foot-pounds of force applied to a trigger. That's where Senator Steve Russell come in. He said, when we convolute the two things, namely a concealed license and a handgun license, what we're saying is you have to have a handgun license to bear arms, and that is just not consistent with the Second Amendment and the intentions of our founding fathers. Never mind the fact that there were no such things as handguns at the time of the ratification of the Constitution of the United States. It's not consistent with the intentions of our founding fathers. Now, there were pistols. There most assuredly were pistols. And they had to be loaded just like a muzzle-loading rifle did. They were also notorious for misfiring. You know, historically speaking, what pistols were used for a whole lot was among the gentleman class in this country. They came in matched sets in elegant wooden boxes, and they were used for purposes of settling disputes called dueling, where before dueling had been accomplished by swords. as swordsmanship waned, pistols as an element of settling matters of honor. Really, honor apparently goes hand in hand with stupidity. You have offended me. Have I then? Will you apologize? No. Then I demand the right to shoot at you. Very well. I shall bring my pistols and shoot back. Again, there are magnificent teachable moment episodes out of Warner Brothers cartoons. I hate you, rabbit. Ducks with bills on the side of it. He does not have to take me home and shoot me later. He can shoot me now. You get the idea. Bunch of freaking clowns. That would be not consistent with the Second Amendment and the intentions of our founding fathers who, though they could not, though they had to wear wigs because of all the lice that crawled upon their noggins, and they had no remedy therefore, still could foresee the day when we would have Tech 9 semi-automatic convertible machine guns that would be the linchpin to guardianship of our American freedoms in case the government ever become tyrannical and hovered a drone over our house, and we can shoot back with our 357 44 Magnum Dirty Harry Peacemaker gun Widowmaker thingy. You feel lucky, government? So that was the controversy as it erupted. Can't be having people have to have no license to carry no firearm in Oklahoma. It wouldn't be Oklahoma. I mean, when you go to church to praise the and serve the Prince of Peace, you want to know that you got your peacemaker so that you can peaceably praise him, right? And if a feller wants to sit down and peaceably enjoy, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 highballs there during happy hour at Arlene's, the best surefire way to know that you're going to be able to peacefully enjoy them is if I can see your peacemaker sitting there riding on your hip. Yep. So, Senator Russell there of Oklahoma City, he identified the conflict. This is where Senator Ralph Shorty, he of the frosted fetuses, fetus in a blanket, you know, that bill, chimed in. And he said he just flat out won't get him no concealed carry license. Because he got him an objection to having to have a license to carry guns. I mean, it's one thing to make you have a license to get married, or to fish, or to be a barber, or a beautician, or to run a business. But daggum it, it is just plain un-American to have a license. I reckon you gotta have a license to drive a car. But it's un-American to have a license to carry a gun. And by way of explaining why he feels the way he feels, Senator Ralph Shorty, you all can just call me Shorty. My, it's a Warner Brothers night on this here radio network. But by way of explaining why he so objects to having to have a license to carry a firearm, he said that he started carrying a gun without a license with him in his truck. Because he's out working in the oil and gas patch one day, when he done plumb got attacked by a turkey. You heard me right, a turkey. I don't know if you realize it, but Representative Ralph Shorty wanted you to understand. He says, and this here's a quote, "Wait until you get attacked by a turkey. You will know the fear that a turkey can evoke in a person. So I beat it with a club. That's all I could do. I wish that I'd had a gun with me." He went on to say that having been through the experience of the Osama zombie terrorist turkey, that he now carries a gun in case he runs into, not kidding, and I quote, a mountain lion. Hey, Forrest, are you out there, buddy? I seem to recall that you know a little bit about the topography of Oklahoma, Stan. A lot of mountain lions in Oklahoma, Horace. Just asking. I understand comedy. I don't often practice it, but I know what it takes to set up a good joke. I know what a two count is. I know what being ahead of the beat is. I know what not talking over the laugh line is. Wait until the applause dies. I know what all the late, and he's been gone so long that it's kind of silly to refer to him as being late, but the late, great William Charles Duncan Fields, known to the rest of the world as W.C. Fields, or Bill to his pals. Uncle Bill, what is that? Nanny goat's milk. It's very sweet. Had this one thing where he said, he was on a golf course, and his caddy was reaching in the bag, and he said, pulls out a liquor bottle. And, of course, it's during Prohibition or some such. And he says, "I always keep that just in case I see a snake." And then he turns and doesn't. No one did a double take or a triple take like W.C. Fields did. And there, it's not as easy as it looks. And so the caddy pulls out the bottle and he, "I always keep that in case I see a snake." And the kid begins to put it back. And he does a triple take, "Huh!" and reaches for the bottle. "In case I see a snake." Ralph Shorty in Oklahoma has taken that to a whole new level. "I keep this gun in my truck because I done seen a turkey one day and he tried to get all Islamo-fascist with me and I had to beat him with a club." "I bought that club in Montreal. Give me that Canadian club. And now I carries a gun with me just in case I get attacked by a mountain lion." Really? Yeah. Maybe I need one of those in case. "Keep this in case I see a right winger." Right? They're everywhere. I got attacked by a turkey one time. See, that's how much America has changed. I remember when America about giggled itself to a collective pants wetting over a story of President Carter being attacked in a rowboat by a rogue rabbit. "Oh, it's just a little bunny." They always say that. But out in Oklahoma, Stan, Senator Ralph Shorty, who causes one to wonder about his constituency, can, with a straight face, say, "I keep a gun in my truck in case I get attacked by a turkey, like before, when I had to beat it to death with a club." Turkeys, geese can... Look, I learned the hard way that geese can be aggressive. While we were in D.C., you know, we were camped at... Not camped, but we were billeted in a motel in Manassas because they get a little cheaper once you get on out away from the rapid transit. One day I'm going to stay a day extra, and me and Ferd maybe will go and tramp around the battlefield. Can't help it. I'm fascinated by it. Not going to go join the Sons of Confederate Veterans and pick at a museum in Appomattox that has a picture of a RuPaul in a bedazzled sequined Confederate battle flag gown. Fascinated. No, I'm not that fascinated. But no. But anyway, we were out there, and every now and then you'd hear, and you'd see a formation of geese flying over. It's a fairly well-watered area, and maybe they were roosting there on their way, I guess they'd be on their way north for the season. Yeah. And so I've got a cup of coffee, and then I'm walking around the parking lot just enjoying the coolness of the clear, beautiful morning. And lo and behold, I turned the corner in the parking lot, and there, smack dab, in the middle of the parking lot, sits a goose. Really, a Canada goose. Migratory fowl. Huh? You know, one of those. And remembering that there is a Scots whiskey distillery somewhere in Scotland that uses geese for watchdogs, I knew to keep my distance. And so I thought to keep my distance by sidling over to the area where the shrubberies were, which pissed that goose off no end. Man, that goose stood up, and with his goosey neck, he craned it forward and put a little U-dip in it and stuck his mouth out and opened up his beak and hissed at me and come a flapping running at me and little wings coming out. And I tell you what, it could... Yes! So I understand the aggression of large fowl. But you know what I did? I walked away. Mm-hmm. I did. For I am an upright moving primate. Shh! Don't tell the right wingers they're primates. Because, among other things, they may not be. They may not have quite reached hominid status yet. That's why it's what little scuffs on the knuckles are all about. I walked away, and I didn't breathlessly run into the into the foyer, the lobby of the hotel, saying, "I was accosted, sir, by a goose, and had I but had my official Oklahoma Stan Marshall and turkey killing gun, I would have put that goose down." No, I didn't. I didn't do any of that. I did sneak back after telling Agnes the story and take a picture. Took a picture of the goose. You might just think I'm BSing you. Hang on a minute. Because Agnes likes things like verification. So, yeah, she's on. Take a picture and send it to me. Yes, I did. I did, Marty. I needed to bring that goose a shrubbery. Here we go. The goose. Cool one. Menu. Add photo. Okay. You know what, Michael? It may be Python Tuesdays. It didn't start. That was not the planning, but as is so often the case, things go sideways. But now, if you happen to follow me on Twitter, you will shortly be able to see the very goose his own self. But it turned out to be rather of a sweet story, because I also told Ferg about it, and hell would not hold Ferg till he must go and look at the goose too. Which he did. And I stood back and I said, "Don't rile the goose, boy. He's more than a match for you." He said, I'm not going to ride on him. I'm not going to ride on him. He was actually thinking of him, because at that point he was just sitting there in the parking lot again. And Ferg kind of frisbeed him a slice of bread. And the goose seemed happy with that. And then Ferg looked over and said, Dad, come here, look. And he pointed. And the story became ever so much sweeter. Because over by one of the little shrubbery bushes sat his mate, who, when her season had come due, had made a nest among the bushes. For yea, verily, there was no room at the inn. And he was standing guard outside, away from her, to draw any potential intruders to him, any potential predators to him, so that she might have a better chance. And there, anticipated young. And he picked up that piece of bread and he carried it over to his mate. It was touching. It's crazy the things that occur to you when you just go out setting about to do Tuesday's program. Because, you know, yeah, it's been real fun and everything to talk about Ralph Shorty out there carrying a gun in his car because he was attacked by a terrorist turkey. When in fact, since he was out there in the oil and gas patch, just driving around like he owned the place, what he probably did was he got up a little too close to their nesting area. And that gobbler come out raising hell, trying to keep that big lumbering jackass oaf away from his mate. Just as that goose came after this lumbering jackass to keep me away from his. But that's a little too much cognition for a right-winger, for a pig-licking, for a general member of the GOP, because they go stomping around the planet as if they owned, as if they had, how about that, dominion of the place. Right? Yeah. But that's just a little too much skull sweat for your average teabagging right-wing, God-fearing fundamentalist to go through. He just knew that his whole life flashed before his eyes before he was able to bludgeon that bird to death. And God, it made him feel like such a man. Such a man. In touch with his animal nature. But not so in touch with his animal nature. That's a little too close quarters. He'd far rather run back about 60, 70 yards and draw a bead on him with a 3x9 scope and take him by the neck with a, you know, little 220 Magnum round or something, some such. Because I just can't see upstanding, God-fearing, right-wing Oklahoma Stan Senator Ralph Shorty carrying a shotgun. He's a rifle man. That's true, Ray. Some trees are edible. Hi. Did you ever eat a stop sign? Yeah. Oh, that was so funny back then, remember? And I love the place that the things take you guys. Clayton, our militant sociologist, writing in, Bob, don't you remember when the sacred geese saved Rome from the barbarian hordes? I do now. Very true. Very true. Jack in Shreveport, my self-defense best bet. Personally, I figure I'd stand a much better chance of defending myself against a turkey or a goose with a club or a stick rather than a gun. Me too. Maybe a mashy niblet. Possibly a spoon. Okay, Kate with tonight's vocabulary lesson. Bob. Hokies, not Oklahomans. Beauticians are called beauty operators. Lots of mountain lions, but more frequently seen would be the turkeys. Wild turkeys don't like no one messing around their nests, so a club would be just the ticket. Many more possums than lions, roadkill or trapped at night. Good with spuds or sweet taters. However, notes Kate, Sooners are more dangerous than any of the above, especially after they have lost to Texas. Hear, hear. But that's what they spend their time on over in the Oklahoma stan legislature. Worrying about women's innards and whether or not having to show that you actually have had a class that has taught you the difference between the muzzle and the breech. That's a violation of the intent of our founding fathers. Right? Sure. But I guess as between the two, given a choice, at this point in time, I will take Oklahoma stan over Georgia. Brand new bill coming down the pipe. It took a 14-hour work day, including but not limited to fist fights between lobbyists and Democratic women in the House walking the hell out. Before the Georgia House of Representatives passed a bill that had already been approved by the Georgia House of Senatating that made a crime of abortion after 20 weeks. No exemptions in the bill for rape or incest. Georgia's governor is a right-wing freak by the name of Governor Nathan Deal. They ban abortion at 20 weeks because that's when the fetus can begin to feel pain. Even though that's not scientifically proven in the least, and it is something that has largely been fulminated in the sloshy, thin, gray settlings between the ears of right-wingers in Georgia that pass for brains. This particular bill got some interest when a member of the Georgia House of Representatives by the name of Terry England, who is a Republican from Auburn, I didn't know there was an Auburn, Georgia, but there is, said the following. If farmers have to deliver calves, dead or alive, then that's a good enough reason to make a woman who is carrying a dead fetus carry it for 9 months. Really? Another one of those confounded little 2012 what the moments for Bob. So, because they have not figured out a way to do an abortion on cattle, If a cow has a dead calf inside of her, then that is a perfectly acceptable reason for a woman to be forced to keep a dead human fetus inside of her until full term. The mind boggles. I guess it never dawned on member of the House of Representatives Terry England that carrying a dead fetus can be extremely bad for a woman's health. But then again, he doesn't care. Because women are the source of original sin, you see. And Jesus loves dead fetuses just as much as he loves the live ones, you see. The bill, by the way, excludes a woman's emotional or mental condition. Now, what they were getting at was that they didn't want none of them slippery-ass doctors out there saying that the woman needed the abortion because it'd be bad for her mental health. That's one of them BS exceptions. She got it that way. If she'd have just kept that aspirin between her knees, it never would have happened. But the way that shakes out is if a woman happens to be mentally ill, then congratulations, she gets to carry her fetus to term regardless. Yeah. And it's been an interesting week in Georgia. By the way, the bill that did pass, that was a compromise bill. That means that it had been worse, and it had indeed. Michael noting, does this guy have a family? If so, can I purchase his wife's milk bottled or cartoned, raw or homogenized? And where can I feed on his children's veal? See, irony and sarcasm, things like that are generally lost on right-wingers. They've got about as good a sense of humor as Cromwell. Not known for being a real laugh riot. When I said mashy niblick or a spoon, I was thinking about, what is that? It's a sand wedge or something, a spoon? Five iron, I don't know. Bill takes it to the next place. What I mostly got using a spoon was steelhead trout, northern pike, and too damn fat. Oh God, it's like that. It's like that story that David in Tennessee sent me over the weekend. A real mind boggler. Came from the Nashville scene. A story by Jonathan Metter, a rather a lengthy piece, but a fascinating one. Called The Changing Guard of White Separatism Convenes at a Tennessee State Park. Now, they don't want to be seen as being, and it's, like I said, you can go to NashvilleScene.com and look up Changing Guard of White Separatism. I'm sure you'll find it. This is serious journalism. This very brave person by the name of Jonathan Metter actually registered for this this white separatist meeting that they had out in the middle of the woods at a place called Montgomery Bell State Park Inn, way out in the woods where nobody would dare come and protest. And they did it there so that they could talk about their white separatist yearnings. One woman who had come all the way from Manhattan said, "Our views aren't very popular. You don't get invited from Manhattan, not Manhattan, Kansas, Manhattan, New York City. Our views aren't very popular. You don't get invited to all the fancy dinner parties on the Upper East Side." I guess it's harder to be a white separatist in New York City, which speaks well of New York City as far as I'm concerned. They paid $150 for a weekend of lectures and a $35 the dinner of what the author, Jonathan Metter, described as a dinner of wilted asparagus and dry pork tenderloin, and an address by a French new right-wing author who is a hero for being, for how anti-Muslim he is. Yeah. And they're trying to, if you read the article, they're trying to pretty up racism's ugly face. They are, in fact, putting lipstick on a crocodile. The positions the genteel, educated Ms. Abernathy on the vanguard of a relatively new front in the white separatist movement seeks to dress up early 20th century eugenics with a 21st century veneer and in the process put fringe candidates into office. This particular woman is running as a vice presidential candidate for the American Third Position Party. It was formed in Southern California. How about that? Not Southern Mississippi. Southern California. She said, "It's my pleasure to introduce American Third Position presidential candidate Merlin Miller. But first I want to mention that A3P is a new party, and it is a party that perfectly represents the values of European Americans, and therefore, the values of European Americans." So what would those values be? Introducing malaria and yellow fever, measles, chicken pox, smallpox, polio, to the New World. Eliminating entire nations by force. Completely rearranging ecosystems. Are those I guess not. They don't like to think of, no, they don't like to think about things like that. And therefore explicitly represents European American interests. It starts with the values. What we have always supported is responsibility, rule of law, and a future-oriented perspective in our own lives. My, that just sounds so pretty coming from a little racist, doesn't it? Oh, by the way, for those of you who keep track of this kind of thing, A3P, the American Third Position Party, yeah, they got a bunch of ties to cranky old Ron Paul. He's had all kinds of meetings with their members, and he's been on conference calls with their board of directors. How nice. But what it boils down to is, and this is what it was mentioning, the spoon that reminded me of the story. When I read that, the first thing that came to my mind was, well, looky here. The knuckle walkers are trying to figure out which fork to use with the Jell-O. Because, see, you can dress them up and put them in pinstripe suits, do anything you want to, but a filthy old racist, fascist, skinhead, white nationalist Nazi is as Nazi does. They just don't like to be seen wearing their bed linens and armbands. So that's where we begin with this evening's filibuster. And God knows, it is certainly nowhere to stop. Some stuff I want to save for prayer meeting Wednesday. Won't touch those. But, you know, that I was alerted from a number of quarters, including our blogger Texas Betsy, of the appearance of Nikki Haley on The View today, where she explained to Joy Behar that women don't care about contraception. Right. That was a little precious moment. The jackass who bombed the Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin has been caught, they say. Police say they've arrested the person they think placed a homemade explosive device. Gee, wouldn't that be an improvised explosive device? No, only Muslims build them, Bob! That went off Sunday and damaged Planned Parenthood's Gillette Street Clinic in Wisconsin. He was booked into the out of... gonna need a pronouncer here. It's either outagami, 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 outagami. And he was booked in the jail there Monday evening on a probation violation. The idiot in question drove away after planting the bomb, the IED, and then proceeded to crash his white SUV. White SUV. So they've caught their suspect, but in a true moment of great, awesome, stunning journalism, the news story doesn't bother to give us his name. Outagami. Thank you, Michael. Outagami. I knew one of them had to be right. But so much, so very much out there this evening. And hopefully you'll bring your own to the discussion. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. And we do badly need your support. As I said, April is getting off to a rather sluggish start. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And you can always reach the program via email, bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. We'll be back after the Green News Report with your calls.
A boy named Billy Joe grew restless on the farm. A boy filled with wanderlust who really meant no harm. He changed his clothes and shined his boots and combed his dark hair down. And his mother cried as he walked out, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." Laughed and kissed his mom and said, "You're Billy Joe's a man. I can shoot as quick and straight as anybody can. But I wouldn't shoot without a cause. I'd gun nobody down." But she cried again as he rolled away, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He sang a song as on he rode, his guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar and laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again, "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." He drank. drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaking hand, and tried to tell himself at last he had become a man. A dusty cowpoke at his side began to laugh him down, and he heard again his mother's words: "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town." Bill with rage, then Billy Joe reached for his gun to draw, but the stranger drew his gun and fired before he even saw. As Billy Joe fell to the floor, the crowd all gathered round and wondered at his final words: "Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town."
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012.
This is not your father's Republican Party.
Biden smacks down GOP attacks on American-made clean energy.
Simply because the United States and the industrial world has been poisoning the atmosphere for the last 300 years, it doesn't mean that the rest of the world should be doing exactly that.
Trying to save the disappearing Maldives from global warming. The FDA says okay to BPA. Pesticides implicated in disappearance of the bees, plus...
You're right. It's a cool car, and it's smooth as glass. So people are interested in that kind of vehicle, check out the Chevy Volt.
Whoops. Fox News debunks itself.
Whoops, indeed. All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Sure, these days everybody hates air pollution. But when I was a kid, we celebrated it as bonus clouds.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, we had been tracking through the month of March the record high temperatures in my old hometown of St. Louis, where it broke the record for 80-plus degree days. Since April has gotten here, 2 days in the 90s. This has been the year without a winter.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what summer brings, especially since there's likely to be drought and even more heat waves.
Oh, what fun. What do you have for us today?
Well, the Obama administration has come out swinging against Republicans' blame game over rising gas prices. On top of a new ad campaign slamming Republican presidential frontrunner Mitt Romney as Big Oil's best friend forever, Vice President Joe Biden slammed the Republicans' attacks on America's clean energy industry on Sunday's Face the Nation.
We're pumping 650,000 barrels of oil a day, more than we did when we took office. There are more oil rigs and gas rigs running in the United States today than all the rest of the world combined. And these guys, what's their policy? Continue a $4 billion tax cut for their oil companies? And they're going out there and they're emasculating all the efforts to deal with renewable energy.
Meanwhile, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney repeated his previous attacks on fuel-efficient cars from America when he told a Wisconsin crowd on Monday that he thinks America isn't ready for the Chevy Volt. Mitt must not be listening to the Fox News Channel show Fox and Friends, which in a remarkable departure from their standard operating procedure, actually allowed guest Lee Speakerman to debunk the very myths and attacks Fox has been perpetrating for months about the Chevy Volt.
I love Fox News and I love feel like like I'm kind of attacking my own family here, but like a lot of my fellow conservatives, they seem to have kind of a fetish for demonizing the vote, and they're perpetuating this myth that the vote was some kind of Obama administration green energy fantasy forced on General Motors during the bailout. It had been in development 2 years before Obama was elected.
Lee, I'm glad you brought up the myth that so many people think that Barack Obama, you know, came to office and shoved this down GM's throat.
Yeah, I wonder where Fox News viewers got that myth in the first place.
Indeed. And coincidentally, General Motors is again number one in sales in the world, and they announced yesterday that fuel-efficient vehicles are their fastest growing segment, with over 40% of sales in March. The FDA has ruled on BPA. The Food and Drug Administration will not step in to regulate the plastics chemical additive known as bisphenol A, or BPA for short. BPA is ubiquitous in food packaging and is found in the blood of nearly all Americans. Recent health studies implicate BPA in a host of reproductive problems, but the FDA declined a petition by environmental groups to ban or regulate the substance. They say they will continue to study the issue.
So Obama's FDA has allowed this to happen.
Yes, they have. Bees are also getting the cold shoulder from federal regulators. Scientists are asking the Environmental Protection Agency to revisit its approval of a corn pesticide that's been implicated in three new studies as the major factor responsible for the alarming disappearance of bees across the U.S. and the EU.
And bees are important. Why?
Because they help us get our food.
Oh, there's that.
There are low-carbon development strategies, you know, renewable energy is there, the technology is there. I hope that people would start recognizing this and come to a more amicable understanding. Just don't be so silly.
That was the first ever democratically elected Maldives president, Mohamed Nasheed, on The Daily Show on Monday night. He was ousted from office in a coup in February, yet he is still campaigning relentlessly to save his homeland from rising sea levels caused by global warming. President Nasheed is still trying to convince people and governments to act in time to reduce emissions that cause global warming. It's in a new documentary called The Island President, which is opening this week across the country.
Right. Tell it to the people of the Maldives that there is no global warming as the seas rise and their island nation literally is disappearing into the waves. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download us anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Lord, here comes the flood. We'll say goodbye to flesh and blood.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
After 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Time Zone. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And I just wanted to send out a little update, a reiteration of the kind thank you to the individual who worked with Alice over at HeelanHollers.com. Heelan, H-E-A-L-I-N, hyphen Hollers, H-O-L-L-E-R-S.com, to send a little care package along Agnes's way. You know, she's been having considerable pain after the December 30th, 2011 car wreck, the truck wreck debacle. And in the care package was a little bottle of pain relief. A sort of oil-based substance that contained oil of wintergreen and arnica and some other stuff I can't pronounce. And I rubbed some on Agnes's back today, and she said she felt immediately better. Said it just, it made her afternoon, late morning and afternoon, much more pleasant, much more tolerable than had she gone through it without it. So, and it did, it had that nice wintergreen smell. It didn't have that god-awful, hospitally absorbing junior kind of... No, it was just lovely. It was just lovely. So thank you very much, and just to let you know that that stuff works. The smile that spread across Agnes's face when she first opened the... come on, the lemon hemp balm. Oh, it was like Christmas the way she was grinning, and it does. It smells delightful. She's loving it all. So, again, thank you, and thank you to Alice. So that's that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program,
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so a Northern Irish priest has sparked a local uproar after accidentally displaying a series of pornographic gay images to a group of parents during a primary school meeting. He put a flash drive on his little PowerPoint presentation and popped 16 indecent images of men. Part of this PowerPoint.
Uh-oh. Gee.
His name was,
Oh, Begora, this is not me flash drive.
Yeah.
Now, I'll catch hell for the accent, probably.
Father Martin McVeigh. Anyway, I just thought, you know what? It's nonstop with that church, I swear.
Well, but, you know, see, this just confirms to me my original idea, Sandra, that we really do have to get a church going dedicated to God the Ironic.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's just somebody, it's like he's having a good time with his various practical jokes, although it's not April Fool's anymore, but, I mean, come on. That's like beyond, I mean, it's not funny. It's quite horrific for the poor eyes of the little 8-year-old who was sitting there. Apparently, it was one 8-year-old there, and the rest of them were, like, sort of disturbed parents. But, you know, the Catholic Church isn't doing that great in Ireland these days.
No, they're having real problems. Self-inflicted.
Yeah. So, I know it's not, Wednesday, but I just couldn't resist. But I was just like, oh, no. It really is nonstop with the Catholic Church. But
yeah, you get the notion that Benny just sits around Rome waiting for the other shoe to drop, going, ah, ah.
Well, I mean,
or is he in Mexico now?
I know, but you know what? He didn't. Did he have to? My eyes scare my eyes with that huge hat he was wearing. You see that? And somebody.
Well, Benny's got a thing for hats and shoes.
Yeah, dude, it's funny. Yeah, you know what time it is with that fool. All of them are freaks, okay? And it's just sort of freaky deaky, and the institution is so huge with their mystery derivatives and weird monies. I mean, it's a horrible institution that's been around for too damn long, you know? Sorry to say.
Too big to fail.
Yeah, it's just hideous. But,
the original, you know, too big to fail, probably.
It is. It's just an outrage, though. I mean, I found that kind of funny, but it's not, because they seem to hold so much sway over people and governments, and, you know, it's truly...
Well, did you hear about this woman in Cincinnati?
Uh-uh.
She was just... No, this wasn't... This is not the same kind of story that we had a couple of months ago about the... what was she? Lutheran layman... Had been trained as a lay minister, and they canned her from her job over some stupidity, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, sure, because she had some religious training. Well, this woman didn't. She was a computer science teacher in a Roman Catholic parochial school in Cincinnati, and she told him she'd be taking time off because she was pregnant.
All right.
Well, at first, the diocese wanted to can her for being pregnant without a husband. And then they decided, well, therein lies the road to another lawsuit for discrimination. And they were right. So somehow or another, I guess they said, well, who's the father? Now, this woman, had she been... thinking about it, she would have said, God, at which point they would have either, well, they would have had, burned her at the stake or something.
Mm.
But it turns out, somehow or another, she admitted, that she had taken part in vitro fertilization.
Oh.
And they canned her on the spot, Sandra.
Well, isn't that still sort of fodder for a lawsuit?
Oh, yeah, she just won a round in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio. But the Mother Church canned her right away because church teaching, nothing in the Bible, mind you, church teaching says that in vitro fertilization is of the devil or demonic or spawn of Satan or, I don't know, something having to do with Gregory Peck, maybe. She said even if she is ultimately victorious in the lawsuit, she'll never work for a Catholic school again. The Archdiocese has responded by saying that Catholic parents pay to send their children to Catholic institutions because they want their children taught by people who uphold Catholic moral standards. She was in violation of her contract with the school when she decided to disregard church teachings in her personal conduct. So while the Catholic Church is ostensibly pro-life, they're just not pro-that life.
God, I mean, well, you know, it's a good thing they have this sort of secret money because they got to keep paying out. It's outrageous. But listen, the thing I was calling about was the, I am, like, so disturbed by this Supreme Court. I mean, all their 5-4 decisions, you know. What happened to the day when you rule, you try to get as many on side as possible so it looks like it might be neutral?
That's over.
Well, then it makes the court just another place where power rules, and there is no arbitration. You know what I'm saying? It's really disturbing because now anybody can be...
strip searched.
I mean, come on. Now, to me, I'm like, if you're a minority, it's just sort of, if I can quote Walsh, you know, it's just nothing wait until these little straight white people start getting slammed for that. Because we don't think this is going to spread across the nation with these police departments. Now they can pull any woman up. And, you know, you think women are going to be fucked over in this little policy? Come on, you know how it is.
I don't know, they'll probably pursue federal neighborhood block strip searching grants to add a couple of extra officers to cover up, to make up for the extra work involved with strip searching people that get parking tickets.
Well, but it's just extreme because, you know, and I might add, and I have to add, that the Obama administration, they pushed for this with the argument that, well, if everyone's included and there's no issue. And it's like, what? I mean, that's straight up police state issues, you know? Not the political state, but the police state, you know, the security fetish. Just moving on, you know? It's out of control. And the Supreme Court... No, you know, to me, what army is backing it? It's really starting to be like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what has to happen, but this particular ruling here is just an outrage to me.
The scope of it, it astonishes. How did this get through? You know, they couldn't. It's a 5-4 ruling, but it's a split majority. Because Alito wrote separately, if I understand correctly.
And hasn't he turned out to be just as horrible, if not worse, than we all imagined that guy? God, he's really frightening, sort of just a fact.
Well, what did we expect? I mean, this is a guy who, one of whose seminal decisions on the appellate court was to uphold shooting a 15-year-old black kid in the back.
Right.
At, you know, 30 feet away.
Right. No, I know. I mean, that's the thing. The thing that I heard about him and thought, oh, my God. And there he is, just as horrific as we think, and he turned out to be. But I don't know. I'm just, and of course, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, no outrage, you know, just sort of a mute, people trying to agree with it for some reason. There is no justification for this. Not at all. I mean, if you get done for a warrant for parking tickets or jaywalking or anything like that, why in the world should you be subjected to a strip absurd. Do you know how horrifying and humiliating that is? It's awful.
I don't even want to contemplate it. And of course, it's all the it was done under the guise, and it's, you know, we've got a private prison industry in this country, Sandra, a very big one. And so this was done under the guise of making the prison population safe.
No, but it's just.
You know, they said there's no way you can tell who's dangerous and who isn't among the 13 million people who are processed as prisoners each year. 13 million, Sandra.
I know, that's the thing. You get that. I mean, the one thing about this ruling is, you know, you start hearing these numbers, and once again, you're in outer space because the numbers are just truly stunning.
But look at the for me, the particularly telling poll quote, if you will, from the opinion, is the terror angle, the nation. The nation that is scared of its own shadow, which we are. In the news piece I'm reading from MSNBC, the court also noted that Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, was initially arrested for not having a license plate on his car, and that one of the 9/11 terrorists was stopped and ticketed for speeding just 2 days before hijacking Flight 93. A quote from Kennedy's opinion,
yeah.
People detained for minor offenses can turn out to be the most devious and dangerous criminals. But, so no, because Timothy McVeigh had already blown up the Murrah building when he got stopped, okay?
Well,
one, and the guy from, that was one of the 9/11 hijackers on Flight 93, well, would a strip search have stopped him? What were they going to, find a what, his box cutter up his butt?
That's the thing. No. And also, they have no problem granting endless rights to these corporations while at the same time taking our rights one by one, rapid fire. And that argument from Kennedy is completely ridiculous, and it speaks to this kind of afraid of every goddamn thing, and we need to subject the entire population to humiliation and possible penetration for engaging the pigs. Now, that's how I look at it. It's like, damn, I'm getting pulled over. Now I have to think, well, okay, I may get shot because I'm a nignog, but also, though, will I be strip searched and violated now just on GP? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the guy the case grew up around actually had the proof that he had paid the thing.
Because he was operating as a black man existing with some common sense. He had that shit in his glove box. I mean, I read the case and I thought, my God, this man did every absolute thing to avoid what happened to him. And he was annihilated anyway.
And see, when I read the case and I read that part as well, that took me to perhaps a slightly different place, Sandra. And this is going to sound crazy, and if it sounds venal or cynical, so be it. But this is also a court that despises, utterly detests, the idea of ordinary citizens getting redress for civil harms done to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, that just seems like it's really sort of how dare... Yeah, you're right about
so
that.
So what would have happened is if his search had been deemed improper, theoretically, he might have maintained a valid civil suit for the violation of his civil rights under, you know, Section 1983 or whatever, and gotten an award against the cops. And it wasn't just one institution, it was two institutions.
Yeah,
he was strip-searched twice.
Twice. I mean, but the thing is, though, how many people, especially people of color, been locked away for 20 years, we found out you didn't rape that white woman so you can go. And by the way, you got nothing. Zilch, get out of here.
Yeah, because very, very few of those end with Morgan Freeman on the beach.
Yeah, and they never get any payout, if you notice that. I mean,
this has an economic element to it, and that is to stop that man who was obviously horribly abused by the system and who should have redressed to the courts to get money judgments against the institutions that abused him. This is an effort to stop that too.
Well, I mean, think about that was the mayor, wasn't it Governor Ryan from Illinois who banned the death penalty?
Yes.
and then he promptly ended up in prison. I always think that's very interesting. But besides that, that is the same state that tortured endless black men, who a lot of them, most of them, are still in jail.
Yes.
So the more you dig into this justice system, the more arbitrary it is, and it's just a living hell for people of color, especially black men. And this decision here, though, wow. Does it give the police? Is it just more? They can use their discretion for search, or is it mandatory now? I mean, how do you think this is going to be implemented?
I think it'll be discretionary, and I think, as with all discretionary police powers, it will be used disproportionately in the community of culture of color.
And I keep going back to this women factor. Give me a damn break. I mean, because all this kind of anything pseudo-sexual that's humiliating is always turned on women. And this is just going to be yet another tool. And any state or country that relies on sort of sexual assault in their handlings of their citizens, this is straight-up fascist police state.
Yes, it is.
Totalitarianism. You know, and when you interject that element to it, the whole thing just made me recoil, and I thought, wow, this shit is rapid-fire.
How do you, because I read the opinions and I was not convinced in the least. How does this square up with the very simple statement in the Fourth Amendment that a person shall be secure in his person, papers, and persons, papers, property, and effects? Isn't that what the Fourth Amendment says?
It's pretty, you know, like all those amendments are pretty damn simple. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well.
Oddly, you know, I find it a little bit odd, at least, that the most complexly worded amendment is the one that has been most simply interpreted, the second, where the simple amendments that are clear as a damn bell are the ones that create the most, that the court does its dead level best to make exceptions to out of clearly stated language. You know, a person shall be, and probable cause shall not issue, but upon all of those things. It's clear. I mean, it's unambiguous in the purest sense of the word, and yet somehow out of the four, there's an exception. If you know the history of it, going way back, long before George H.W. Bush even, going back into the Reagan era, and before the Reagan era, the Fourth Amendment has been deemed to be this Swiss cheese of exceptions. You know, the one I'm most fond of citing is U.S. v. Leon, where the Supreme Court said, they beat down the wrong door and they roughed up the wrong people, but they did it in good faith, so no harm, no foul.
Yeah, once again, like you said, the forever backing whatever egregious behavior befalls some poor-ass person just trying to get on. You know what I mean?
Right.
Amazing.
And I can't ever read these cases without thinking that what they're doing is they're also protecting the money. Because courts punish morons, manage the mean ones, and above all, protect the money. So even if they're ruling in a criminal context, as long as they're making sure that this abused man can't get recourse against his abusers, then they have done their ultimate job of protecting the money.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the implications is, you know, it can factor in chilling protests. It's going to chill so much. And it's just kind of, like I said, you know, the rights that you just assume, because let's be honest, you shouldn't have to deal with the prospect of being violated like that for any kind of bench warrant for traffic or anything like that. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, cases in which jail is not even an available punishment. Okay.
What do you mean? But just because you have contact with these people, it means that you have to be, you know, seriously violated like this. And I'm waiting for the pushback on this, because this is, This is a really bad, bad one, okay?
And, you know, you asked earlier, was how would it be applied? Well, let me create a caveat to what I said earlier, Sandra, and that is this. In a place, for instance, like West Virginia or Eastern Kentucky, where things like civil disobedience run a real chance of throwing a monkey wrench into the fascist workings of outfits like Alpha Energy and Mountaintop Removal. Don't think for a minute that some young female who's been arrested as part of a tree sit, don't think she won't be strip searched four or five times. You know, just to make sure that she's not carrying, a chef's knife somewhere.
Well, no, I mean, it's horrific. You know, the idea that you don't even have that protection anymore. You see what I mean? It's just, it's incredible. It's just sort of evaporated now, and you're left at the mercy of, to me, just something really horrible. I just am thinking, my God, you know, I don't like the police in the best of time. I don't even want to have anything to do with that. You know what I mean? And I don't want anyone I know or care about to encounter them in any form. You know, to the point where you don't even want to call them because, oh my God, that poor black man who was shot to death when his medical alert went off.
Dear God, we haven't even gotten to that one.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, that one.
68 years old. His medical alert goes off, and there's nothing wrong with him.
Well, it's just doing what it's supposed to do.
It went off accidentally. It alerted the cops.
Yeah, somehow he ended up dead behind it.
And the cops show up, and they can be heard referring to him as an N-word.
Right, that's usual. And the man said, oh, are you going to come in here and kill me? This is the thing that was really disturbing. You see what I mean? I mean, it just went on and on. Where he told them, well, what, you were going to come in here and kill me. And that's exactly
And this is
happened.
A Vietnam veteran.
Yeah, no, it's an outrage. You know, I'm just thinking.
A Marine.
That one really is disturbing, along with that other kid who got chased down into his house and shot to death in his bathroom in Brooklyn. That kid.
Yeah.
Then you have the one in Pasadena who was like, oops, just outside, and someone had called saying some Negro did something to him. And they shot this kid, didn't even turn a light on him, just shot out the police car. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No light on this kid, just shot him.
Well, you don't need a light when you're using infrared now, do you?
Well, it's just whatever, right? I'm just saying, it's just kind of like...
The 20-year-old in Wisconsin.
That poor kid.
Yeah, what's happening is America is having to come to grips... Well, no, not come to grips, but at least be confronted by the fact that if this is a post-racial society, whatever post-racial means that it's worse.
Well, yeah, because is Zimmerman still out?
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm being facetious here, but it's like
the stuff we're finding out about his father's involvement. That he was present at the questioning, never told them that he was a former magistrate?
Right. Well, I mean, no, but see, none of this, I'm sorry. I mean, the fact that they tested a black corpse for drugs, that should tell anyone all they need to know. I'm sorry, Bob, I don't mean to be flippant, but that fact right there is beyond disturbing for me. It's like...
Right. Well, once again, they're trying to do a little bit of work to protect the money.
Oh my God, you know, so, and, but you know what? Isn't the Republican convention or whatever down in Tampa?
Yes, it is.
Can't everybody and their brother be packing? What are they going to do about that down there?
Well, don't think for a minute that the Republican hardcore Second Amendment people will probably have heat packing rallies.
Yeah,
hoping some shit breaks out.
No, I just think, you know, I don't know. It's just sort of the Martin case is despicable and gruesome, especially since it was dormant until, I guess, the social media got a hold of it, right?
Right, and it was mainly dormant until the 911 tapes came out.
Yeah,
that's the break day. And I can't really fault media in that. Because suddenly they had, you know, they the 911 tapes, the 911 recordings, were what made this obviously the horror that it was. It provided the concrete evidence. You see, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but then it just, but no, now, you know, because Obama had the nerve to make a peep about it, all of a sudden it's open season on this dead
oh, yeah.
Child. I'm sorry. And the idea that, oh, by the way, you know, we're pretty damn sure that the screaming is a young person. You know, no shit, okay? You know, no shit on that. I was like, oh, really? You sure about that?
Yeah, because I was pretty sure the first time I heard it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, well, no, of course it's not that fool screaming. Anyway,
that fool who had been to court-ordered anger management classes,
and you know, hit up a woman, of course, and stories like that about him.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't. You know, the problem here though is that the black community in Stanford is being lectured on. Oh, you got to keep your cool. This is what's coming out of that.
Well, and what
it's just like, yeah, right.
One of the town leaders who was a black man said, you know, it's just an unfortunate incident.
Yeah, no. You know, you're hearing that song and dance, and it's just kind of like they're just getting people ready that nothing's going to happen. And you know, I kind of think, you know, I guess there's a grand jury convening on the 10th. Is that the next date to look out for?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't, you know, at this point I'm getting to be thinking that it'll be a surprise if anything happens to him at all.
I said a long time ago that this time was being used to set up the defense.
Yeah, well, I just wonder if he's going to, you think he's going to be arrested?
I think he might. It depends entirely on it depends on how the prosecutor presents the case to the grand jury. Because, you know, by law, grand jury proceedings are all held in secret. And the fact of the matter is, with a nod and a nudge and a wink, a prosecutor can tell a grand jury whether or not he wants a true bill. Hence that old saying about a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if he wants to.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, it's not really, you know, I mean, it's not even that much to discuss. The story is just so awful, and I mean, I'm glad that the family is at least getting some attention, you know. But I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if anybody's going to be punished for this. That's all that I'm worried about, you know.
Exactly, and it's. Dig a little bit later into this business about Mr. Zimmerman and how he was present at his son's interrogation and how he Mr. Zimmerman even went with the cops.
Wait, hold on for a second. Hey, Simone! Okay, get off the phone!
I'm sorry.
That's all right. But it's just how it is over here, too.
Yes, okay. What were you saying again?
Well, no, they did it. The cops took George Zimmerman back for a so-called reenactment of the event.
Yeah.
And Daddy came with him. You know, Daddy was present like a lawyer is present.
Yeah.
I think if the Florida bar had any starch about him, and if anybody down there would dare to file it, a charge of practicing law without a license would probably stick like glue to Zimmerman's daddy right now, and it needs to happen.
Well, let me ask you something.
He was actively participating in the reenactment that helped the cops figure out whether or not they should charge him.
Well,
now that's lawyering, Sandra. It really, really is.
I mean, no, but I also saw a quick article about how the various prosecutions and the court system there, you know, they don't really spend too much time when the victim is not white. I mean, that's basically what the article stated. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's just one roadblock after another. And let me just ask you this. I don't know if you talked about it, but someone please tell me, how is it that they couldn't get in touch with this poor child, dead child's parent with his phone on his body. Can you clue that in for me? 3 days?
The only thing I can come up with, and has anybody seen the phone?
I don't know.
I'm wondering if the phone got shot too.
Yeah, I don't know if it's on hearsay. I don't know what.
Because everybody heard the shots. Daddy had to wonder where the boy was.
Yeah.
And 3 days he's on a slab?
Right, that's all. And, you know, to me, that just, you know, that's once again the whole racial component. But anyway, I don't...
Well, I'm going to go where I've gone before, and I'm glad I was able to confirm that others have gone there. But, you know, 3 days on the slab is the 2012 equivalent of that fan and chain wrapped around Emmett Till's body at the bottom of the Pearl River, okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's stunning the, you know, how you can talk about both cases. It's too much. But, listen, I have to mention the, you know, if you don't die, you can eat it. That's going on with the food inspection.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, no, that one is just so disturbing. I mean, basically, the Obama administration is proposing a rule that will allow the poultry producers to inspect
themselves
product. Now, wow, you know, so to me that just means,
yeah, well, you know what was shocking about it is it engendered protests out in front,
right.
You know, in D.C. in front of the Department of Agriculture
from inspectors,
and they were coming from places like Alabama,
right. No, I'm saying, they're like, oh, MG on that.
Well, but consider the statistics, Sandra. These chicken kill plants, and they are, you know, the industry is doing more than any vegetarian ever did to make me a vegetarian.
Well, that's, yeah.
A small-time chicken plant can do under current regulations because of the inspections involved. They're not allowed to kill more than 70 birds a minute. Now, you know, we'll pass this on to the Horn Math Department, but let's just take an 8-hour shift with 70 birds a minute. Now, that's 60 times 70. That's 4,200 birds an hour. That's 32,000 plus birds a day, if I've got my math right. Now, that's under the current scheme, okay? That's with the federal inspectors in place. But what they're saying is that if the chicken plants are allowed to inspect themselves, those limits on 70 birds a minute will go up to as much as 175 birds a minute. Jesus, how do you kill 175 birds a minute? I mean, is it gas, machine guns, what?
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of different ways they can expand that number, obviously, if they're tripling it and shit.
Well, but the larger question, though, is you do some of your family's grocery shopping, right?
Yeah.
You ever walk into the grocery store and they're all out of chicken? You see what I'm asking?
Yeah.
I mean, the poultry section, even here, where my little grocery store is probably getting ready to go under, which is going to be a real hardship for my neighborhood.
Oh, so you're about to go into the food desert, huh?
Yep. It'll be a 30-mile round trip to buy a jug of milk.
Yeah, that's food desert time.
Yeah.
But
even in with that grocery store, in the hard shape that it's in, you walk in there, and there's always chicken.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not getting where it is that we need to ramp up chicken production to 175 kills per minute.
No, exactly. I mean, to me, all it's, you know, it's just, not only is it, it's obviously problematic, but it's more of an ideology, and it's very sort of, you know, it's just this neoliberal / libertarian under the guise of budget. You know, we gotta cut the budget.
I mean, is this? Yeah, right. This is austerity. It's what's for dinner, literally,
well, no,
right?
But yeah, exactly. But like I said to you, the only option is to, protect yourself and the people you care about as best as you can. And if that means saying nighty-night to meat, I guess that might be upcoming. Because, it's an outrage. If you're informed, if you get yourself informed and you find something out like this, why am I going to say, oh, hey, Simone, here's some chicken. Enjoy. You understand? How do I do that?
I don't think you can.
You know what I'm saying? Then it becomes, a you problem. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But the thing is, and I guess this is the larger extension of it, is this is a disease that's spreading. 3 months from now, we'll find out that there's a problem in the tofu industry. Okay, and this is, and I think in a larger way, if I'm making any sense at all, this relates to the greater problem of the fact that we are reaching carrying capacity. We've already passed carrying capacity, but what we're finally seeing through the deregulation and the globalization of the food market. We are seeing ultimately the front end, as Kate might point out, we're seeing the front end of what it looks like when a system that has been based on fraud all along is no longer able to maintain the outward appearance of getting the job done.
Well, yeah, and also the whole frame of just-in-time inventory and the supply train, everything, within a margins operating within an inch of your life, all of it is so fragile. Unlike the bullshit they feed to us daily, no, it is not very strong here, this system we have for our food and any kind of mass.
No, there is no city in the United States that has more than, according to the estimates that I've read, there's not a single city in the United States that has more than a 2 week supply of food.
Yeah, it's a whole scheme of selling mass food and mass everything. But, I should leave. But if I may end by something that's a little bit more cheery, have you heard of 3D printing?
No.
Well, 3D printing is a basically self-contained, I'll use a scenario that I was reading about. Say you're on a ocean liner, you're a captain, you're running, and a part of your engine breaks. You're like, what the fuck? Well, if you have a 3D printer, you can create the part right there.
What?
Yeah, it's a layer effect. They're using them for different types of objects. I mean, listen, we're looking at a technology that is taking us to the communistic sort of life of Star Trek, if I may get our Star Trek.
Oh, goody! Yes.
Replicators. Think of it in terms of that. This is sort of base of that type of technology where, say you want to have a new set of cuffs, shit, don't go to Walmart, just go to your 3D printer and you can make that shit right there.
No, oh my.
Because the components that are used to create it, they can substitute different polymers and different titanium, all sorts of different type of material can be crossed. Anyway, I'll send you the one article I read in Forbes. I mean.
Oh, I gotta read this.
It's absolutely fascinating.
And in turn, I'll also have to turn it around and send it to Albert.
Yeah, the implications are just mind-blowing if you take it to, for me, of course, I'm going to slip in, the end of work up in his mug. Because if you don't have to deal with mass, if you can make your own shit, well, that just changes all sorts of things, don't it?
By ways that we can't even conceive.
And this technology is, obviously it's in its early stages, and of course my.
But it was a couple or 3 years ago when Boss Man Wayne got all excited and sent me this link to this it was video from a 60 Minutes episode about people, about this medical technology where they were taking the transparencies like you can print on in your printer.
Yeah.
And they were coating it with stem cells or whatever. And
that's also.
And printing it out on the printer and growing people's freaking fingers back.
Right. Well, this is what is there's this startup in Silicon Valley that's, you know, about to embark on kidneys and that kind of stuff. That's also what the 3D printing technology is leading to, sort of creating organs and growing dogs. I'm serious about this. I'll send it to you. It's in Forbes, you know, and of course I set up one of my Twitter searches with 3D printing, and Lord have mercy, can you get great information that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so...
And lo and behold, I'm getting emails rolling in. David in Maine has sent me a YouTube. Darlene has sent me a YouTube.
Shut up. Okay.
Yeah, no, this is apparently capturing the imagination of people. And it should, but the thing is, and let me just back up and be Dr. Negative for a minute. Those medical advances, who's going to get to leverage them, Sandra,
in a
profit-based healthcare system?
No, the next comment was like, there's already a huge copyright mess with this stuff already. It's already causing problems. So, you know, but my whole point in bringing it up is that, you know, with the sort of, I don't know if it's, nano, I don't know, these sort of kind of computers that they're making that are sort of atomic, I mean, it's going past the microprocessor to new material, which will make the computer.
It sounds to me like an actual manifestation of the age-old human urge for alchemy.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, no, but this, and so, basically, all I'm trying to say is if you get to a point where you can restrict the sort of Walmart and the horrible labor that's needed to make all this crap we use. I mean, the implications are pretty mind-blowing, you know?
Oh, they absolutely are. And then, there's the other side where that we can just sort of, for those with the means, we can just sort of Steve Austin Dick Cheney forever.
Well, no, I think that it's obviously, there's so many questions involved, but I don't know, it's just sort of something else to kind of occupy your mind with that's not so...
It absolutely is, and it's a part of that. It's a part of that hopeful future in many ways, Sandra. But it's a future we can only have if we get. How can I put this? If you've got a family that is absolutely hell bent on eating Oreos for dinner every day, and lunch and breakfast and snacks, then you're never going to make any steps forward. And that's where we are now, because we're going to need, resources are finite.
Yeah.
One of the terrifying things out of this 1493 book is the very precarious position of the production of something that we in the 21st century consider as prosaic as rubber. The whole damn rubber crop could collapse in 10 years. Because of diseases that we have bred our way into making viable. Okay. And I don't want to sound like some sort of the Rosicrucian population limiter or something, but, you know, the rubber goes, we're screwed. Because everything, you know, gaskets and insulators and yada, yada, yada. We've got to learn to be smart about our resources. You know, if we want to use petroleum, and so many of these things do use petroleum to be produced, then we've got to sort of reserve the petroleum to its sane usage.
Yeah,
frivolously, you know, in some sort of grand 21st century potlatch, burn it as quickly as we can.
Well, yeah, but you also, yeah, and if you want to, you know, try to reimagine, you know, a different way of providing for, you know, sustainability and all that sort of stuff, You have to get a handle on the sort of dictatorship of money and the financial, horror show that we're living through right now, because, you know, if we can't get a handle on what's going on now, you know, what we imagine with all this wonderful technology, it ain't going to amount to
shit. Call me crazy.
Call
me crazy, but it strikes me that the first thing that has to happen in order for any of this hopeful aspect of the future to come into being, there's one thing. Religion has to go.
Well, that's what I mean, but see, then we start getting into, these sort of utopian type, and which I just don't think is, you know, I don't know. I mean, there has to be a way to bridge the madness by opening up these possibilities to people gradually. You know, if you see something working well, you embrace it. You know, that's just human nature. You know what I'm saying? So.
Sure. I mean, faith healers still get flu shots.
Right. But anyway, I just sort of, you know, it's all kind of hit and miss for me. I'm always sort of interested in kind of science, even though I don't consider myself smart enough to understand all of it, but I certainly can tell when something is worthwhile in the macro sense for everyone. You know what I'm saying? And being able to control your own product is fucking amazing to me.
Oh, it's mind-boggling. And I got an email in from just a minute ago. It says from Jay. It says, the first thing to print with your 3D printer is another 3D printer.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yep. Uh-huh. That was also discussed in this one article. And, it uses CAD right now. So,
right.
With the whole... Yeah, I mean, it just looks to be really interesting.
And, by the way, you got a note in from Andy a few minutes ago, going back to the whole strip search thing.
Mm.
He said, tell Sandra it was Democrats. Democrats that allowed the rats to be put on the court.
Oh, of course. I know. I was there screaming at the TV.
Me? Yes. Well, I was screaming. The horn was very young during the Alito hearings, and we were screaming into the microphone. Andy says, they could have fought, filibustered any of the rats, but no, just let them go right through. Blame the Democrats for this baloney on the court. Pure fascism in its most blatant form. Andy says, I heard ex-Senator Russ Feingold the other day, who supported Judge Roberts' bid for the court. Well, Judge Roberts said he would just call balls and strikes. How did we know he'd turn out like this? That's what Feingold said. Because you're supposed to research his past, you fools, says Andy.
No, I don't want to hear the hand-wringing, you know, after the fact.
Right. He said
those elites will be okay. We have to remember who this is ultimately directed towards. It's not them. They'll always be okay.
Right, and I mean, is it okay to as we sit around and wait with, you know, tapping our toes and drumming our fingers on the desktop, waiting for Citizens United, well, it might as well be, Affordable Care Act decision to be made, can we at least just pause for a moment, Sandra, and understand understand that if it comes out the way so many of us expect, can we understand it for the social engineering and social Darwinism and eugenics practice that it is? And are we surprised that a court dominated not by its chief justice, but by its chief ideologue in the form of Antonin Scalia, that they would practice social Darwinism and eugenics when, in fact, Scalia is the son of a man who was, in fact, a great proponent of Benito Mussolini?
Well, yeah.
You said you don't want to hear any hand ring. See any hand ring? Well, I don't want any. How could we? How could we possibly have imagined this when there are sure enough, no kidding, brown shirted fascists sitting on that court?
Right, no, I agree. I don't want to hear anybody talking about this, that, or a third. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, give me a break. But anyway, all I got to say is avoid chicken and go Baylor.
Yeah, no kidding, go Baylor. Absolutely, okay. Go Baylor.
Have a good evening.
See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, just to follow up on that, because I remember it so well, it was my own senator at the time, Robert Byrd, who delivered this, and this was during the confirmation hearings on Samuel Alito. He delivered this after a couple of weeks of right-wing advertising on practically every radio station in West Virginia. Tell Senator Byrd, blah, 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 you don't want any obstructionism. Blah, 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 blah. Right-wing, 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 right-wing. He issued this BS letter, or statement, rather, that talked about how he had heard from many of the West Virginia families who have spent much time sitting around the kinds of kitchen tables where donut stains make sugary marks on paper towels, and there are little rings from coffee saucers, and what they were concerned about was whether or not our justice would stand up for our freedom of religion. I was fit to vomit then. If you go back, if you look up the dates of the Alito thing, you go back to the archives, you will hear me turn. Really, it's like hearing colors and seeing smells, you know, on acid or something. You can hear me turn purple because it was a sham. It was a fraud. It was a complete inside job. There's no way that either John Roberts or Samuel Alito had any business getting on the court. But a bunch of Democrats who were much more prone to rolling over on their backs to wait for George W. Bush to scratch them on their tummies decided to abrogate their responsibilities and abdicate their positions and let the fascists who will please, can we frame the Affordable Care Act debate this way, please? Alito and Thomas and Scalia and Roberts are waiting for, they want to practice eugenics on America. And guess what? You're the ones who are going to get eugenics practiced on. We could do a show of hours and hours about what it looks like when the world's ability to sustain itself begins to fall apart. I know it's a topic that speaks very clearly to Kate. But it begins with things like this. You know, they have a fit over contraception. Oh, population control, that's where they're going next. And it's off to the ovens for you! You know, Obama re-education camps. But the real population control is going to be practiced by the right wing. And guess what? They don't want us at the party. Or if they do want us at the party, they don't want us providing the entertainment. They want us providing the illumination. You understand? Darlene writing, she says, Sandra may want to look into the Zeitgeist movement. Ben Leash, Peter Joseph, and Douglas Mallette, tons of lectures and chapters around the world. It gives one hope. They talk about a resource-based economy or a natural law economy. She may find what they're educating about very interesting. There's a TZM official channel on YouTube. They talk about all kinds of technology that's out there that most of us don't even know about. Yeah, I'm going to look into it too. Thank you, Darlene. And thanks, Rich, for pointing out the videos on 3D printers. I appreciate it. 13 minutes past 8 p.m. here on the East Coast, and let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Okay. Let's try another button. And hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob, how are you today?
Brother Albert, did I conjure you?
Yeah, 3D printer. I heard it, so I came running. that's going to be a great little thing. I mean, we already see like Boeing, for example, using it to manufacture parts. Yeah, because when you have a 3D printer, there's not a whole lot of waste involved. So you can make, you know, items pretty strong, very light, and you can make them out of, you know, nanomaterials. You know, we're not quite there yet as far as I know, but, you know, there's all kinds of stuff like that. We're welding nanowires with light. You know, because at the nanoscale, you know, the molecules that, you know, and the elements that make up our universe here, you know, they behave a little differently. Carbon is clear, okay? So, you know, you make a sheet of graphene or you know, a sheet of carbon nanofiber, carbon nanomolecules, you have this clear, transparent sheet. And when light happens to pass through it, guess what it generates?
Oh, no, not electricity.
Of course it generates electricity. And not only that, it's also going to generate electricity when infrared light hits it. Which means, you know, that argument of, oh, the damn sun didn't shine at night, kind of doesn't work anymore. I mean, it's not going to do the same as, you know, in a full broad daylight, you know what I mean? But it's still going to be there. You know, and the whole thing is, we all know this with solar, and we all know that we're about to see a massive mobilization into it.
Oh, but not to rain on anybody's parade, but the right wing is, the little monkeys are jumping up and down and flinging poo all over the monkey house right now in celebration of the collapse of another one of those government giveaways.
What happened now? Which one?
Solar Trust. Down, down she goes. Another taxpayer-funded failure.
Was it thin film?
No. This is Solar Trust of America, owners of the development rights for the world's largest solar power project, filed bankruptcy in Germany yesterday, couldn't meet a deadline for a federal loan guarantee last year, and weren't eligible for another loan. Chapter 11 filing on Monday listed assets between $1 million and $10 million and liabilities between $50 million and $100 million, according to the Washington Post. They held the rights for the 1,000-megawatt Blythe Solar Power Project in the Southern California desert. And so the right wings, I got my little right wing announcement earlier today. Well, they've done it again. See, he's trying to pick winners is what he's trying to do. When he could have just give that money to the oil industry and drilled a moose into the ground, and we'd all be paying 19 cents a gallon at the pump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. They're so delusional. Yeah, well, I think they're probably, this is probably sad for the wound, because I did a fair amount of ass kicking on these climate deniers and petroleum hydrocarbon industries. Pretty much, you know, you have to stop it out where you see it, and I certainly, you know, I'm not taking no quarter. I'm putting these boys on a duel, and
just running around slapping them with gloves and stuff, and I will see you at the sunrise, sir.
Well, you know, I mean, how many times do you think you're going to sit there and say to me, you know, how many arguments am I going to get into about the medieval warm period to the point to where I'm going to do so much reading on it, I know more than any right-wingers even going to have attempted.
What about the little ice age?
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, I mean, and the beauty is, I'll tell you one thing right now, another thing that I'm kind of noticing is that scientists are coming out of the lab. I can't pronunciate the word, but there are little mineral crystals that they found in some peninsula in, you know, in Antarctica, that little peninsula that sticks up, kind of goes to touch South America. And, you know, they found that these crystals, you know, coincided with something about the medieval warm period. And, you know, of course, right away, where was mankind? Where was our cars? Blah, 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 blah. And 2 days after that, the researcher actually came out and said, you know, I don't know why you people are sitting here trying to extrapolate, you know, what you're extrapolating from my data, but you're wrong. You know, our study did not, you know, go against anthropogenic global warming. This is, you know, that's a well-funded fact. It's just what it is. This is what it is. You know, and this is the thing. When you argue with these dummies, they'll tell you.
And they are dummies.
Oh, they're dummies. Up is down. Since when? That's up. What, you don't see that? How do you not? This is a simple little graph, and I know it's, you know, nuanced, and there is some noise in there, but it's going up. I mean, it's clear. It's clear as day. Look at it. You know, oh, look at that medieval warm period. Oh, look at the satellite imagery now. Look at it. Look at the heat maps. Look at where we're seeing all the temperature change.
Well, but the problem there is, once again, their cafeteria nature in picking and choosing, because they never talk about the fact that, man can't possibly affect the climate. They never talk about those ice cores from Greenland that correspond with the wild burning down of the Iberian Peninsula when the Roman Republic fell in love with silver.
Oh, there's a, I mean, you know, it's the same thing, you know, they'll celebrate, you know, the solar trust collapse, and then they'll try to blame, you know, Obama, you know, they'll blame Solyndra on Obama, because we all know, you know, President Barack Hussein Obama and his time machine, you know, I mean, he invaded Poland,
Sherman set the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, he bombed Pearl Harbor, you know, he's done everything, I mean, anything that's ever done.
Lindbergh, baby.
He's tricky. He's tricksy. Yeah, he doesn't mess around. But in reality, you know, Solyndra, you know, was part of the Department of Energy's 1703 program, I believe, for the loan guarantee for energy, you know, and building infrastructure like the government kind of should be doing. And this is a program that, you know, yeah, we all know it's not a perfect program, especially when he had it, but I got to applaud him for it. You know, I mean, there's so much to kick George W. Bush about. All right, I'll go. I won't dig it in this time. That's a good thing. Thank you, George W. Bush, for, you know, having some sort of foresight and trying to look green, you know, for greenwashing yourself a little bit.
You know his daddy bought a Chevy Volt, right?
Hey, nice looking car.
Yeah.
First
bought it,
GM I want.
Bought
yeah,
it for,
wow.
But I love the backstory on it. He didn't buy it for him and Barb.
Oh.
No, he bought it for Neil.
Mm.
You know, you know, yeah, you got it because, you know, Neil's got that little tie hooker problem, and
yeah.
Right.
you know, the thing I say is funny too. That, you know, they like to flip out and freak out about the Volt too, and you're not selling them. It's like, nobody wants them. Bullshit. I want one.
I just don't have the 40 large laying around.
Yeah, want and capability are two different things, dummy. God, these people. This is ridiculous.
If the early adopters will just get out there and buy them, mm-hmm. price will come down.
It will. Yeah,
I mean, did you hear that in the Green News report about 40% of GM's spike in sales that led it to be the number one seller of automobiles again were coming from their fuel-efficient fleet? Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, the neat thing is, these fuel-efficient GM vehicles are not Vegas, Albert. I remember the Vega.
Mm-hmm.
Just terrifying little boxes. Okay? These are good cars.
Yeah. The fit and finishes, you know, because let's be real, real honest, GM in the Bush administration and Clinton administration and previous to that were garbage. Plastic. Garbage. You know, you get, when you're buying a $50,000 Cadillac and it's got them big hollow feeling plastic buttons on all over the dashboard, and I know there's old people drive those cars, and I know their eyesight ain't so hot, but you know, come on, you gotta have a little more pride than, you know, the little nubs are still on the plastic dials. What garbage. Just junk. But you know, now it looks like, oh, they're starting to care about fit and finish. I mean, I guess that's what also happens when they buy European cars, and you know, the Europeans, they're not gonna, you know, yeah, we all know they don't even need the olive oil that's 6 months old, so they're not going to sit here and buy that kind of crap. You know, and there's nothing wrong with having good high standards. You know, I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, with all these, you know, I'm telling you, with polysilicone, with the prices where it's at, that's what killed the Solyndra. I said that to you years ago, right? A year ago when we were talking about it. You know, when Solyndra first came to be, polysilicone was $144 a kilogram. How many pounds of polysilicone, and that makes up a third of the cost of the panels? Well, the panels were $700, $800. So, and how long ago did we talk about that copper laser shooting through the hexane gas to raise the surface area of these panels?
Well, not only that, it was, it was surprisingly not reported in places like Radio Rwanda, but it was just less than a month or so ago that the U.S. busted China for essentially dumping solar into the American market. But you know, where was Fox Business and Stuart Varney to talk about that relative to Solyndra? Yeah, no, nowhere to be found. Well, of course they couldn't compete. They were dealing in a dumped market. Go ask the steel industry how easy it is. You know, that's steel, by God, that's American. Ask them how they compete in a market where Chinese crap gets dumped.
And to think
that's not something sissy like solar now.
Yeah, no, and that's the saddest thing. You know, these are the people that, you know, they really could use it, because they, you know, a lot of times these conservatives, you know, down in Mississippi stand and all the stand states, you know, these people ain't got a pot to piss in or a wind to throw it out of, much less, you know, they're always complaining about energy costs. Well, energy costs is only going to keep continuing to rise if you keep using hydrocarbons, you dummy. You know, but as it stands right now today, with solar being about $1 per watt, it's on parity with hydrocarbons now, and, you know, it's only going to go to 75 cents. And then it's going to go to 50 cents. So as we stand today right now, you can pretty much erase your monthly utility bill for power, for electric power. You can do that in 5 years from right now. And then next year it'll be 3.5 years. And the year, you know, it's going to continue to drop.
Yeah, just like the way computer technology. Bloop, 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 bloop. Yeah.
Exactly. Except because we're already going, you know, 7/8 the speed of light, you know, in comparison to 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You know, that's like the thing is a lot of times these people are stuck in 1976, you know, where they think, oh, it's not ready yet. What do you mean it's not ready? What are you talking about? It's not ready yet. Anybody who's ever bought, you know, panels or what have you, it's like, oh yeah, you know, during the winter our power bill is $6, and then in the summertime they owe us $63. I mean, a power company paying you? What? I mean, come on now. Don't be foolish. Don't cut your nose off to spite your face. You know, electricity didn't go away when Tesla beat Edison. You know, it didn't. It was better to send AC current. It was better if we didn't have AC current. God, you know how fast we would have burned through our coal with DC power generators every quarter mile? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, come on now. You know,
yeah, and
Edison.
Right, and consider, you know, consider what that coal baron said in that overheard conversation. You know, I don't really care what the EPA does about burning coal. I don't have to burn a damn bit of it over here. India and China will take all I can ship.
Temporarily. I think we're going to see, you know, if they're making a glut of solar panels to put and send here, you know, there's nothing to stop them from putting them in their cities. There's nothing to stop them from putting them everywhere. And when you look at especially a place like India, you know, which is notoriously warm and sunny, you know, you think about what kind of good that's going to do. You know, that's going to raise up everybody. It's going to raise, you know, the quicker we get electrons to these people in a clean way, you know, they're not going to burn coal. They're not going to burn those things. You know, a lot of times these third world countries are a little ahead of the curve on us in regards to, you know, organic and in regards to, I mean, heck, the Hindus won't even kill their cow. They'll starve. They look at the cow as a member of their family. These are people who, you know, from my outside view, take nature seriously. You know, they're the ones, you know, I forget her name, the doctor, but she's real smart. I forget her name, Indra. Maybe her name is, but she's always talking about, you know, the soil and organic agriculture and so on and so forth. You know, these are huge movements. You know, these are people who are doing massive good. You know, what the hell is Alpha Energy doing for the good of, you know, the Indian woman? Are they creating these small little bank loans and, you know, so the Indian woman can meet their bills and, you know, build credit? And, you know, are they doing anything like that? No.
No. No. Sorry. No.
No. No. They don't. They don't
no. They're just money. They're just playing in an accounting dodge. With Bank of America, whom incidentally Sierra Club continues to remain in a business relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't know.
Yeah, well, speaking of disgust and stuff, well, GM, well, look at GM. GM renounced their membership with the Heartland Institute. That's also very good news.
Yes, it is.
Now we're going to have, yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing is, and this is the thing, just to kind of address the, you know, the thread of what you guys are really getting at when you're talking about a 3D printer, you and Sandra, the writing is on the wall. You know, when we do get to this point, you know, where we do become a resource-based economy, and everyone has access to the resource just like you have access to air that you breathe, when everyone has solar panels, when we have solar panels everywhere and the road is electrified and you're charging your car, I mean, money is going to, I mean, for the first time in, what, 15,000 years, it's going to start to and its influence. You know, we're not going to see, I don't think, I don't know. I mean, you know, you look at my children, your children, everyone, you know, everyone that's listening to this right now has more information available at the tips of their fingers than all human beings that ever existed combined versus just you. I mean, you know, as smart as you know, what's his face and this guy and that guy and Tesla and what have you, they're not going to beat you if you had access to the, you know, your little phone and you're just doot, 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 doot. No, what happened? You know, you'll beat them in Jeopardy. You'll smash them. You know, I mean, there's, it's just that we have all this information. We have all this education. We have all this potential. And, you know, these companies like, you know, that do fight this progress, they know that the end game is they're not going to really have much of a place. You know, like, these big power companies, we'll still need, you know, we'll still need power companies to maybe, you know, to create a backbone for the grid. You know, but we do, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this, and I don't want people to jump, you know, too quick, but we need Generation 5 nuclear power plants. We need that. We need that to just, A, we have the material, and B, well, actually, A, including A, you know, subsection of A, these Generation 5 power plants eat up, they use as fuel the spent fuel rods from all the Generation 1s that melt down and all the crap that we're still using. So these Generation 5s could potentially clean up a problem that we're going to be looking at for the next 50,000 years if we don't do something with. You know, and I don't know about you, but I don't trust anybody, any corporation, any government, any person to be able to keep, I don't know, how many metric tons of spent fuel rods that are still radioactive for 50,000 years. You know, we don't have that kind of luxury. Who the hell has that kind of luxury to send off a problem for 50,000 years? We don't have that.
For people who may not have a clue how to use it, and the mere discovery of which may prove to be the end of what happens to be humanity at that point in time. Same way I feel about multi-billion lakes of toxic sludge. Yeah, same thing.
Florida is in Georgia. Florida is in Georgia, dumbass.
See? By the way, a
put
note...
Some toilet water on it.
Sorry. From the toilet? a note coming in for you from Robert in Australia. He says, solar panels are popping up on roofs all over my suburb, all over Sydney. I need to send you some snaps at some point. The state government seems to be doing its very best to wreck the rebate system where the electric company buys back power, but that doesn't seem to be slowing people down, especially as electricity prices skyrocket here in Oz.
Amen.
Let me just tell you one little thing, Albert. I've made this drive so many times lately, it's getting to the point where I can pinpoint, you know, it's just sort of etched into my mind, the highway itself. You know how that gets when you drive a stretch of road a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you're going south on 81 and you're getting ready to turn west on 64,
mm-hmm.
The exit right before I head west on 64 is another Lexington, Virginia exit. And there's some hotel that sits on a hill there.
Okay.
And, you know, you're driving, you know, same old, it's all just, you know, it's just like when an Eagles song comes on the radio and you can still remember where the 8-track player went click, click in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
And you miss the click, click when it's not there. Well, I'm tooling along, coming back. I'm like, what the f*** is that? And I'm really, really sensitive to seeing wind turbines because I get excited.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, looky, there's the future.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I went and did one of those W.C. Fields double takes because it took me a minute to process that them things over there were wind turbines. They weren't up on stalks and spinning like propellers.
Okay. No.
They were vertical. I mean, their blades were vertical, and they were, and they were just, and they were round, and they were sitting on the roof of this very nondescript hotel, who had apparently decided to cut down on its electricity bill so as to maximize profits, by generating their very own electricity. And you know what? There in that little corner of Virginia, those wind turbines were just going, and, you know, I stopped a few minutes later to put some gas in the vehicle, and it was not a windy day, but there those turbines were going, and I went and I looked it up, and you know how old that design is?
Very.
The earliest incarnation of that vertical wind turbine design go back to the Persians.
Oh, that's a lot older than I even thought.
And I don't mean, I don't mean like the Persians of the 17th century.
No.
I mean the Persians of constantly at war with the Greeks. Mm-hmm. Persians.
Yeah.
Xerxes, Artaxerxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cyrus, you know, those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And there it is on a hotel roof in Lexington, Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It makes sense. Why not? There's no reason to not do it. I mean, and the thing is you know, I mean, you know, you argue for this, we argue for this, and our side, we cannot sit on the bench. We cannot just sit. We have to demand it. Demand it constantly. Solar panels on every roof. Windmills where applicable. And if you look, they have a map now on the internet that takes all the live data from the, you know, it's about an hour lag or 45 minutes. But you can look at the wind map of the United States and you can see it's beautiful actually. But it shows you where, you know, where the wind is flowing and how it's spinning around on it, and you're just like, well, we're bathed in electricity. We're soaking in it. We're swimming in it. You know, it's like we're zooplankton looking for the ocean. You know, we're in it. I mean, we are just swimming in energy potential. And for us to sit here and soak up the last, you know, petroleum hydrocarbons out of the earth and, you know, to dig and, you know, to drill, drill, drill. You know, I mean, you know, they say drill, drill, drill. I'm going to take drill, drill, baby, drill. I'm going to keep saying drill, baby, drill. Solar panels on every roof, windmills where applicable, and drill, baby, drill for geothermal. I mean, we got, what are you, crazy? How do you not want to take advantage of it? You know, the only people that don't want to take advantage are the people that are
But you see, Albert, That's great. That science fiction technology you're talking about there, that's going to be so effective for us in about 1,000 years. But right now we need our coal and we need our oil and we need our gas because it's just not ready.
Yeah.
Now, 1,000 years from now, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you know, you're trying to hurt me here. You're really trying to hurt my digestive system.
Well, I got one more for you. I've been saving this one.
No. you say this.
I know. Well, but this is just precious. Oh, where did it go? I had a story out of Australia. You remember, and I'm sure you do. What was it, a couple of years ago when Don Blankenship went down to the Rotary Club of MacDowell County and delivered his important speech on the future of humanity and said if we don't keep burning coal, you're going to wind up just like China, where you got 9 families living to an apartment and everybody on bicycles. That's where public transportation leads you. He did it. I mean, you can look at Don Blankenship, like YouTube. It's all there. It really isn't.
I picture that guy from the wrestling. I don't ever watch the wrestling, but I was younger. I used to.
Oh, yeah. He's got that sleazy little pornographer mustache that just kind of crawls over his upper lip. And he talks like this.
Yeah, the funeral director guy that used to walk.
And the next thing you know, you're a bunch of communists living 9 families to a 3-bedroom apartment if it's that many, and your plumbing's 12 miles away.
What a fool!
Well, apparently there's a goober just like that in Australia.
Yeah, of course they have a fair amount of coal there.
Well, but I don't understand what it is about being a coal baron that makes you a paranoid maniac.
Mercury.
Bingo. That was easy.
Yeah, heavy metals.
and not the fun melodic kind, neither.
No, not at all. Yeah,
so down in Australia, dude is giving a speech, and I can't find it, and I wish I could.
Yeah, they're Harkonnen swine. That's what they are.
But they are. Oh, they you're are. Beautiful evil, my baron.
Pustules.
But he's giving, and he says that, what is it? The CIA, no kidding, it says this in public and people don't just like laugh and walk out of the room. He says the CIA is trying to kill the Australian coal industry. Because the CIA is... No, really, really, I mean...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really, the CIA. Because
they're
trying to advance the green agenda.
Oh, you know, I am so sick of that green agenda line. You... What? What? You know, and this is the thing, I have to explain. You've
I didn't know there was that much brown acid left over from Woodstock, and somebody's been stockpiling.
Brother Bob, they're freebasing it. I mean... We're sitting here.
Is that the 2012 warning? Don't freebase the brown acid.
Yeah, seriously, what is wrong with you? The CIA is forwarding the green agenda
for Obama.
For Obama, the CIA. Now you know. I know that nobody. You know, we don't. None of us have love for the CIA in our hearts. I mean, if they do a good thing, great. But most of the time, we just expect them to run drugs and weapons and perform coups and all the other crap they do. You know, so, you know, there's not a lot of love in my heart for them. But even that would be, you know, I can't see them doing that, the green agenda. And you know what the green agenda means? We're all going to the camps. We're all going to be turned into Soylent Green.
Yeah.
Whatever other thing.
I'm going to be over there under the Northwest Watchtower selling cigarettes.
Oh my God, I just don't get this. I don't understand where their point of reference is. I hope the CIA is doing the good work, because that's good work. I applaud them if they are doing that. Which I don't believe, but if they
But remember, this program is monitored in the bowels of the National Security Administration. We know that for a fact.
Hey, maybe we're getting through.
Yeah, Agent Fred.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you know, these things happen, and they make my little mind wonder. I caught a snippet of last week's Bill Maher, and Van Jones was one of the guests, and they were talking about Trayvon Martin. And somewhere along the way, and a couple of weeks before, in discussing the whole Geraldo hoodie thing, I had said something like, "No, Geraldo, you goddamn dummy. It wasn't the hoodie. Trayvon Martin would have been gunned down by this homicidal freak had," and this was the important phrase, "had he been wearing a tuxedo."
Yes, he did. Hey, Van, how you doing, buddy? We really like you on this one.
Hey, Van, so there he is on Bill Maher, and he says,
"Yep.
What, do I have to send my children out in a tuxedo?"
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm probably making too much of, you know, that's just a little, you know, that's just a coincidence. Any mind could go there.
Nah, you're the heart, you're the pulse. And if they had a brain, they'd listen. Van Jones has a brain, he's probably listening.
Hey, Van.
You know. Hey, Van, how you doing, buddy? And hi, Mr. CIA agent.
That's Agent Fred. That's P-H-R-E-D, Fred.
I mean, yeah, Fred, you got a lot of making up to do for the CIA over the years. I hope you do. I hope we can say, CIA, man, they did a good job. Wow. Man, that's a good thing. Oh, yeah, isn't that great? No, I'd love to be able to praise them.
We got a moment. We've got a moment here. It's been a long time since Agnes won a toaster. But I just got my wife. You know, she's not back here producing, Albert. So my wife emails me during the program. It's pathetic. I think we need counseling. I get text messages too. From 15 feet away. We're such pathetic technological weenies. But no, Agnes just got the evening's toaster. It's just the reference, just the reference. Under the subject heading National Security, Agnes just sends me an email that says, "All hail K, all hail K." Two for one rentals on Wednesdays. Oh, God.
Oh, good old Agnes. Oh, boy.
Oh, mercy.
I'm telling you.
I love those little moments. All
our 19th anniversary. We'll be here in less than a month. And I tell you what, it's been 19 years of stuff like that, and it's magnificent.
That's right.
All hail K. Hey, Van. These things happen.
Yeah, Van. Hey, if they're not laughing, what are they doing? You know, come on now. You gotta laugh.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, somewhere in his little coal line bunker, Don Blankenship's worrying about having to be stuffed into a two-bedroom apartment with my bunch. Hell, I'd worry too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, Bob, brother Bob. You and I could live in a tenement building with you, no problem. You know, but good old Don, you know, when it comes time to picking the radishes in the courtyard and,
What? You know. I'll tell you what, Albert, Bob, y'all go down and pick them lettuces and them radishes and I'll set up a brokerage.
Yeah.
Don't y'all unionize now.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, I really do think that we're going to see a collapse of this, of what we've had. I do think we're going to see that, but I think we're going to transition quite well. You know, I think it's, you know, it's probably going to be about 5 years after we, you know, it's going to be self-apparent. You know, once we do, you know, once we're generating 35% of our energy, via solar and another 20-something percent out of wind, because I think they're looking at that maintaining its edge, and the more coal power plants we're closing, you know, the better off it's going to be for everybody. I mean, we're not there at fusion yet, but once we have electrons, there's nothing to stop us from doing almost anything. Yeah, I mean, you know, 3D printers right now they're out of polymers, and soon it'll be out of everything else. Nanotechnology, you know, we need to suck a lot of carbon dioxide out of the air. You know, we're going to suck this carbon dioxide. I'm going to pump it under the ground. Why would we do that? Carbon dioxide is one of the raw ingredients for nanoparticles, and we need it.
And you split it, and oxygen comes in handy sometimes.
Oxygen, that's a little handy once in a while. But that's the key. That's the key. You know, our argument has oxygen. Our argument does photosynthesis. I mean, we're on the side of nature on this. You know, the momentum is with us. I mean, just it's inherent reason. I mean, it's these people are crazy when they're fighting against this, and they have a lot of money. And you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, these kinds of things, you know, I think these kinds of things were, you know, standard. You know, I mean, nobody, you know, I didn't make the energy system that we have. You didn't make the energy. No, none of us did. You know, but heck, this is what we do. And if you don't, you know, I hear people crying about it all the time. If you don't like your power bill, and I don't like my power bill, and I got some other things I got to get done first, but trust me, solar panels on my roof is on the list. It is on the list. I mean, it is there. It's right there. It's over. And every day I turn around, it's even cheaper. Now, I'm not going to wait forever, you know, but I'm going to try to adopt it as soon as I can, because who doesn't need another $180 in their pocket every month?
Well, who doesn't need another $300 leaving it for my coal-fired pals down at Appalachian Power?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, Jug of Punch in the chat room found the article. The headline, Mining Magnate Clive Palmer, can't make it up, says CIA is behind campaign to kill coal industry. Green groups want to destroy coal industry. Palmer claims CIA, Barack Obama are in on the sabotage. Let's see. The big difference is that this is funded by the CIA. That's the big difference. You only have to go back to read the Church Report in the 1970s and read the reports to U.S. Congress, which sets up the Rockefeller Foundation as a conduit of CIA funding. You only have to look at the secret budget that was passed by Congress last year, bigger than our whole national economy, that the CIA's got to ensure that. You only have to read... You only got to do a lot of stuff to get to where Clive got to. I mean, is this guy as big a clown in Australia as, say, Don Blankenship is here? You know, I'll get a report back from our Australian audience. Do like little children say, Mommy, Clive's talking crazy on the telly again.
Brother Bob, listen, I'm going to pretend he's right.
The Rockefeller Foundation. You know, life was so much simpler when we could just blame crap on the Illuminati. They're running out of people.
Yeah, they are. The Rockefellers are, and they're
Is George Soros not, has George Soros not made it to Australia yet? I mean, really, the Rockefeller Foundation, they're rather banal, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, well, of course, and, you know, the Pew Charitable Trust and their art-thieving ways, and, you know, all the robber baron, you know, philanthropist organizations, you know, I'm sure, you know, if they were doing such a thing, heck, they already have more money than, you know, 10,000 generations could spend.
Our jobs, our security, our exports, our balance of payments are transferred to North America when they could be coming for Australians. The Greens in the coming Queensland state election, all their candidates should resign if they're being funded by an offshore political power. It's tantamount to treason. My apologies for the crappy accent, but I do Blankenship much better. This is on the fly.
Yeah, Rupert Murdoch, you know, I love that. They can always go after George Soros, you know, because he gives a little bit of money to Drug Policy Alliance and Normal or something, and I don't know what else he's doing that's, you know, I don't get my checks from him. I hope you're getting your checks from him, but,
Not one, never.
Yeah, come on, Van. Hook it up. You're over there listening. Hook it up. Tell
somebody, please.
Come on. You don't think Bob needs it? Come on. I mean, come on.
The PayPal button's busted. That's what it is.
That is busted. That is. You got to do the gift thing, but that's not too hard to figure out.
Yeah, BobKincaid@gmail.com.
Yeah, pretty easy. It's pretty simple.
And, brother Albert.
Come on.
Yeah, get with it. I got a roll, brother, but I'm glad I conjured you.
If you say it, I'm coming.
All right.
Brother Bob. Be good, man.
Albert. Yeah, it's just like Beetlejuice. See you, brother.
You only got to say it once. Be good.
Bye now. Later. Brother Albert, the sage of southwest Wisconsin, Clive Palmer. You know what? I just know he's met Don Blankenswine. They're bound to swan around somewhere together. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation? Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. First thing, I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'll mention that I put my $52.50 donation into the mailbox today.
Bless your heart. I do. We all do appreciate it.
And I don't want to end the show on a down note, so I'll tone it down a little. But I've got to say, after listening to the beginning of the program and then the conversation you had with Sandra, I've got to encourage people to continue to protest, even if they put us through these ridiculous strip searches. We can't let that dissuade us from doing what we should be doing.
No.
And, you know, I just...
But if you're in a place or circumstances are such that you know you're putting yourself at risk of this kind of hellish treatment...
Yeah.
I think given the nature, depending on the purpose of the protest or whatever, you know, it is possible to protest and engage in civil disobedience without arrest.
Sure. And it's also possible to be arrested.
I mean, one of the things that upsets me about seeing people of goodwill arrested in places like D.C. is the fact that that's $100, $100, $100, you know, even without the strip searches, Kevin, $100, $100, $100. Into the pockets of either the parks of the Capitol Police or the Park Police or the D.C. Police that could be used for considerably better purposes.
Yeah,
and in a dangerous place like Appalachia, when innocently sitting down in a public space. Could get you $100,000 bond to add the humiliation of two or three strip searches into that. It has to be taken into account, Kevin. It truly does.
Oh, sure it does. But it's the only way we can stand. We've got to stand up to it. We just can't take.
Oh no! You can't. No, you can't.
You know, and that's what I would encourage people. There is a little out clause in that ruling they made, saying that if you weren't going into the general prison population, then that didn't need to be done. And I think that's an interesting out clause because how many people
Well, that's, you know, Malloy last night suggested that that was the white folks out.
Yeah, exactly, and I agree with him. That's probably what that is. Speaking of that, just as you and Sandra were talking about, the one thing that concerns me is that, just like Malloy says on his show, they want a race war. They want us to be divided against each other.
Right, and that's why I mentioned the business about viewing the Affordable Care Act decision, as if it comes out the way we fear, as a function of a court that is willing to practice social Darwinism and eugenics. And, of course, eugenics was a darling of the fascists, and, you know, Scalia is a fascist. He just is. I mean, I'm not saying that. That's not like saying Antonin Scalia is a booger eater or a poopy head. Antonin Scalia is a fascist. It's not name calling.
No.
It's an accurate description of his politics. Fascism is a real political philosophy. It's a hateful one, but it's also very much a real one, Kevin.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, I want to encourage us to stay together, those of us who are on the same side of everything here, to stay together and not let this divide us racially.
Oh, no.
You know, it's only the morons on the right that we need to avoid. I don't care what color they are. If they're a right-winger, you know, you can't even talk to them. There's no sense in even bothering to try to explain something to them because they're so... They don't want to listen. They don't want to hear anything different than their worldview. And I find that sad, but at some point I just throw up my hands and say, okay, I tried.
Well, and like Reverbo has so often said, sometimes you just got to realize we're going to have to close the bus doors and drive on. We can't wait forever for them.
That's
but
right.
But it's awful good to hear from you, and we'll have a longer conversation soon, I hope.
All right, Bob, thank you, and have a good evening.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Take care. All bye now.
Bye.
From Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. And it's time to get out of here. The email coming in real quick, like from our buddy Robert in Australia. He says, never heard of Clive Palmer. All I can say is that this news is out of Queensland, and Queensland produces some eccentric types. I guess that's kind of like saying an Alabama produces some eccentric types. I think that's in the same drift. But Robert does say the Aussie accent was quite good. Well, that's it. I'm moving. I'll fit right in. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Robert. And thanks for tuning in, joining in. Tomorrow, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday. Hope you'll be here for that. I will be. And we will all have a merry, rollicking, theologically wonderful time. Okay? Thanks for all you do to keep all of this going. Seriously, your kind contributions. The time, the finite time that you share with us, it means so very much. Thanks to our volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Susan and Gene. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, to my head writer, David in Tennessee, to John Fox, and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there and learn about things like the Coal River Wind Project, in which we hope to save one of the last extant unviolated mountains in southern West Virginia. CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.